Hello and welcome to The Family Show. I'm your host, Eleanor Rossman, and joining me today and every week are usually Brenda and Randy Lee, but Brenda's a little bit under.
We're down one, yeah.
So we're down one. We're
the better of the two, so yeah.
No, you're terrific. And we're going to talk about Easter and tombs.
We are. So we're in Easter, right? Joyous season. We're also in the midst of a mental health pandemic, the likes of which America has never seen before, right? One study recently estimated 40% of Americans in 2022 suffered from depression or anxiety, up from already staggering percentages of 10, then 20, then 30% through the last decade, right? It's just getting worse and worse. More than a quarter, I just checked this today, more than a quarter of the country is on prescription mental health medications. Right. That is right. That's the new normal.
Yeah.
Right. And everyone wants to know why this is. Where's this coming from? And my answer is it's Easter. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And all stories of tombs being emptied. Right. That's what Easter is. Story of a tomb being emptied. All stories of tombs being emptied seem to be about tombs being filled. Right? All stories of stones being rolled away actually seem to be about stones being set in place. And it doesn't matter how wise you are until you trust in God, until you let God be your hope, right? And even as you do trust in God, it's going to look like the tomb is being filled. It's going to look like the stone is being sold in place, right? That's just the way it's going to look. So we've got to stop focusing on appearances and just trust in God, right? So let's take Solomon, for example, right? Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived, right? People came from all over the world just to sit and watch Solomon say and do wise things, right? I can think of no one in the world today that people will travel thousands or even hundreds of miles, not to get advice from, but just to hear and see them say or do smart things. Maybe Michael. Maybe Michael, right? But other than that, right? Right? And Solomon, right, had to be really smart for that to happen, because that's his life, right? Which brings to my question, why did God make Solomon so smart? I mean, I know Solomon asked for wisdom, and God's a generous God, and knock on the door shall be answered.
That was a clue.
Right? He's a good father, that kind of stuff, right? I get that. But I still think maybe there was a little overkill in the blessing of Solomon, right? God could have gotten his house, his temple built, if Solomon had been just smart and not as smart as he was, right? A lot of really good architects are smart without being as smart as Solomon, right? So I ask myself, why did God make Solomon so smart? And what I came up with is that he made Solomon so smart to help the rest of us understand how complicated life is and how we'll never understand it, right? Not even Solomon understood it, right? In fact, Solomon was depressed, right? And you come back to what we got to remember is we need to rely on God. If we're to even have a chance of knowing what's going on around us and not despair. I mean, the reality is our lives are chock full of things that look like tombs.
Yeah.
Right? And all these tombs have stones in front of them, and we can't even tell when the stones are being set in place and when they're being rolled away. Right. So you think of the time of Solomon, and God's got a vision of the world post Solomon. Right. There's going to be one nation, the whole world. Right. One nation. that nation will have one God, that God will have one temple, right? And Solomon is going to be the vehicle that gets us there, right? Temple's going to be in Jerusalem. All the nations of the world will come to Jerusalem to worship and be saved, right? That's the plan.
Right.
Right? In Solomon's eyes, in one generation, that plan is dead, right? Stones rolled in front of the tomb, and there is no point trying to open things up again. The plan is dead. Right. Solomon is not even dead yet. Right. Paint's just drying on the walls of the temple. But Solomon writes the book of Ecclesiastes. And there he says, so I hated life. I hated all the things I had toiled for. All the wisdom, all the work, all the knowledge, all the skill, right? And some fool takes it over after you and messes it all up. It's all vanity. It's all a chasing after wind,
mm-hmm.
right? And by the way, the fool he's talking about is his son, right? Solomon, right? And Solomon's not wrong exactly with this evaluation of life in Ecclesiastes, right? Sure enough, Solomon dies. It doesn't take a week. The kingdom of Israel breaks in two, Israel, Judah, right? So much for one nation, right? Then you can't even get all the Jews worshiping in the temple, right? The Jews in Israel are worshiping one place. Jews in Judah are worshiping in the temple, right? Can't get all the Jews worshiping in the temple, let alone all the people in the world. And then things get worse and worse,
mm-hmm.
deader and deader. Finally, the Assyrians overrun Israel. The Babylonians overrun Judah. Both kingdoms completely destroyed. Temple completely destroyed. No stone left on top of another. The people are all in exile. You can't get any deader than that. The stones rolled in front of the tomb. But the amazing thing is, even in that moment, if you ask God's prophets, they're saying the stone's not being rolled in front of the tomb. At this moment, it's being rolled away. In God's eyes, the resurrection has begun. His plan is alive. One nation, one God, all worshiping together. It's all very much alive.
Are you saying Solomon wasn't that smart?
I'm saying exactly he wasn't that. That's exactly right, right? Does God bring it all back down to the foundation, the studs? Yes. But does reconstruction mean death? Or does reconstruction mean resurrection?
Yeah.
Right? Solomon was as smart as a person could be. Yet, from appearances, right, he had no idea what was life and what was death, right? In the hands of God, things take on surprising appearances, right?
Yeah.
Over Holy Week, a really good friend of mine's body just exploded into detox, right? It just was like, you know what? We are done with this. And just everything's shutting down. And there's no way a body can take the stress that this body is encountering, right? Everything's shutting down and nothing's working and, right? And the family gathers to see him off. But instead of dying, the guy ends up in rehab.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
This physiological trauma everyone assumed was rolling the stone in place was actually rolling the stone away.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking. It's kind of shocking what we think is the worst thing that can happen. You know, when they talk about people before they go to detox, you hit rock bottom. you know, but that's actually often the beginning of light coming in because, you know, I can't do this myself. I need God. I need help. And so that's the beginning of the resurrection.
Well, that's exactly, Eleanor, that's exactly right. Right? We think of the beginning of recovery as ceasing drinking or mm-hmm. ceasing drugs, right? We think that's the beginning of recovery. That's not the beginning of recovery, right? Just, you said it, you're exactly right. The beginning of recovery is where you say, I have no sense of my own life, mm-hmm. right? I am not in control. I don't know what's going on here. I don't even understand what's going on here. But I understand that there is a God who loves me,
mm-hmm.
right? That realization.
It's like the prodigal son over and over again, right? That realization, wait a minute, I'm worse off here than I was before I left. You know, it's that, right? It's that recognition that is the turning point.
Right. Your favorite line in that story.
He came to himself.
That's exactly right. The beginning of resurrection is the coming to oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And the coming to oneself has nothing to do with self.
Mm-hmm.
It has everything to do with encountering God.
Right.
Right. That's the moment that we have to get to. Right. Solomon is so convinced that as smart as he is,
mm-hmm.
his life has got to be about him, and his life has got to be about his work, right? And then at the end, he finally realizes none of this is anything unless it is centered in God. None of this is anything unless God dwells in it, and if God dwells in it, I don't need to understand it, and I don't need to be in control of it.
You know, it reminds me, I think it was St. Thomas Aquinas, after all the brilliant writing and work and everything that he did, said, you know, this is all straw.
That's right.
None of this matters.
He has his heavenly revelation.
Yeah.
He comes back from the heavenly revelation. He's like, burn it all.
Yeah.
Right? This is all distraction. This means nothing compared to what's on the other side.
We're going to take a quick break, but you're listening to The Family Show on Holy Family Radio, and we'll be back in just a minute. We're back with a family show with Brenda and Randy Lee, minus Brenda, but she'll be with us next time.
We hope so.
And we're talking about Easter and tombs.
We are, and how hard it can be to distinguish stories of life from stories of death, right? At least if you are focused on appearances, right? And that really is why we have to just trust God, right? And probably the best example of that dynamic in the Bible is Noah's Ark, story of Noah's Ark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think
we all know it, right?
We do. We all know it. But I think we visualize it a lot more pleasantly than we
yeah,
should.
Yeah, I agree
right,
with you.
Right. Before the break, we've been talking about the Babylonian and the Assyrian exiles and God really stripping everything down to the foundation. And essentially, we have the same dynamic with Noah's Ark, right? You go back to Genesis 1, which is creation story well before Noah and the Ark, right? You go back to Genesis 1, and God creates the heaven and the earth, right? Just getting started. Heaven just creates heaven and the earth. But what do you have at that point? You have darkness. You have no separation between the waters of the heavens and those of the earth, right? Right? It hasn't been let there be light yet. So what's going on during the flood, to compare it to Genesis 1? Well, you got water being just dumping and dumping and dumping down from the sky into the sea, right? It's just this unrelenting storm, raining and raining and raining, and it can't stop and it won't stop. And it's got to be cloud covered for a storm like that, right? Overcast, cloud covered, dark. Can't see the sun, can't see the moon, can't see the stars. Endless darkness, dreariness, But what's it matter that there's no stars? Because who's navigating anyway? Right?
Yeah.
Where would you go? So we have the Earth, vast ocean, really just water, right? No land, the upper basin combined with the lower basin, because you just got this water just pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring and pouring, right? The only degree of light is the degree of light associated with a storm, right? And on this endless ocean, in this unrelenting, infinite storm, is this one boat with no direction, tossed about, right? And you're in this boat. If you're Noah, what are you thinking? Right? If I'm Noah, I'm thinking, God can't see me. Right? God has forgotten me. Right? This is just like day one of creation all over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? God has brought me back to this dark, formless, purposeless, lifeless, empty existence. And the best you can say here is you go through the motions because nothing here can matter.
Yeah, nothing makes sense.
Right? After all, where can you even go? What's direction mean in a world where there's no place to go?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yet the reality is by the time we reach the flood story in Genesis, the world, although that's how it all appears in the flood story, the world actually in that story looks nothing like it did in the creation story, Genesis 1, before there was light, right? At least it looks nothing the same to God. Because for God, because he's on the other side of the clouds, there still is moon, and there still is sun, and there still are stars, right? There still is light, right? And for all the rain and for all the storm, right, the sea you're on isn't formless and lifeless as it was in Genesis 1, right? In the ark story, the sea you're on actually teems with light. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the animals on the land obviously aren't swimming, right? But the sea is teeming with life, right? I have to believe that for as long as they were all on that ark, Noah and his family and the animals must have eaten a lot.
Of fish.
Of fish, exactly.
I don't think anybody on that boat liked camel soup.
So. That's right, right. The animals weren't eating each other,
right?
There are only two of them, right? So they got to be eating fish, right? So the sea is teeming with life, mm-hmm. right? And for as much as you may think on such a vast ocean you must be invisible to God out in that ark, you are in God's eyes. Right? You are constantly in God's eyes. And even as we are reading the story now, the center of the story is that boat. It's not this huge, vast, formless ocean, right? It's not the storm. In the eyes of God, the center of the storm is always this little boat. Right? You, no matter how vast and empty your world and your little boat are seeming to you, you are still always the center of the story for God.
You know, I think a lot of people have gone through depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you can't see your hand in front of your face. It's very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, I guess you lose focus on what's real,
mm-hmm.
and you become so inwardly focused. And I'm not saying this is biochemical, it's circumstances that you're in and on, but I think that's so worth remembering. And when you're talking about that boat, it reminds me of the church, you know, the bark of Peter, that especially in our days when things look even crazy as far as things happening in the church, is to stay on that boat and know that who's really in charge of it.
That's, what a beautiful image, right, is that this boat is forever going to be in the hands of God.
Forever.
Forever. And if it's in the hands of God, he's never going to lose sight of it. And I think, Eleanor, you're exactly right. I have to believe that one of the most depressing thoughts that you can have is that you are invisible.
Yep.
To everyone.
And you are alone.
And you are alone, and no one can see you, right?
No one cares.
And no one cares. I mean, it's even less than no one can care because no one can even know that I exist.
Yeah, you're invisible. Right?
And the reality is that even in those moments where you feel that that's the way the world is, you are the center of God's story.
And even
the center of the narrative.
And when you're in that, you know, it really sometimes takes everything just to muster up the prayer, let's say, where you say, you know what, God, I'm lost. I feel so lost. I have to trust in you. Direct me. Even though I can't see, I'm going to trust in you.
Lord, I am lost, but I know you love me.
Right.
I know the shepherd is coming, right? Mm-hmm. You think about Luke 19, the story of Zacchaeus, right? And again, famous story. We all know it. You got this short little tax collector. He climbs up the sycamore fig tree. And to me, it's interesting that some translations, not all, but some translations add that it is a sycamore fig tree in full bloom,
mm-hmm.
which means dense leaves.
Yeah.
Very dense leaves,
yes.
Right? So you got this little guy in this huge tree, right? These things go 98, 130 feet up, mm-hmm. right? And I know Zacchaeus doesn't climb up all 130 feet, right? Because mm-hmm. he's not trying to see how high he can climb. He just wants to get high enough to be above the crowd.
Right.
But he's still this little guy in this huge tree, right? And Jesus still sees Zacchaeus through all the dense foliage. Right? It's not him through all of these leaves. Right? Two very different stories. One on land, one on sea.
Yeah.
But they both tell you the same thing.
Even though it's dark for us from our perspective, from where we are, we have to understand, God, this has no blocks.
God never loses sight of you.
Yes, that's a good way to just...
Right? You're exactly... There's no blocks. He never loses sight of you. Right? There's nothing in your circumstances. Right? Right? How big the ocean, how thick the leaves, there's nothing in your circumstances that can change the fact that God never loses sight of you. Right? Your circumstances doesn't matter to the eyes of God. Right? How big the ocean, how thick the foliage, right? God will always see you and he will always bring you to him. God will always see you and God will always bring you home.
And we just have to believe that, because no matter what we think, what we feel, what we see, we know that he's there for us. We're not alone. We're not invisible. And that's the, you know, that's what the devil likes us to believe about us, ourselves.
What is the one thing God hungers for?
Our love.
That's exactly right. And whose image were we made in?
In his image.
That's right. So the thing that we most hunger for is
love.
Love.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so that's the foundation of our self-image.
Yeah.
I am loved.
And it's not what the world tells you, because let's just say you lost your job, you lost your spouse. I don't know what the situation is, and it looks like we're abandoned. We have to just dig a little deeper and realize, no, Lord, I don't know what your plans are, but they're your plans, and I know that you love me.
This is not a tomb designed for death. This is a holding tank designed for resurrection, right? Whatever my circumstances may be, God doesn't deal in death. Right? If God dealt in death,
he
we wouldn't have Easter.
Yeah.
Right? God deals in conquering death. God deals in resurrection. And we just got to remember, whatever this story may look like, my story is a resurrection story because
yes.
my God loves me.
Amen. We are out of time, but we invite you to join us every Friday at 12:30 on 720 AM for the Family Show.
And keep us in your prayers.
For Brendan Randy Lee, I'm Eleanor Rossman, and we encourage you to listen to the beautiful sound of seasons.